Hi and hello, football fans. Your old pal Dave Damashek here. Make sure you check out the Dave Damashek football program. You can watch it on YouTube, NFL.com. You can listen to it on iTunes or Stitcher or NFL.com/podcasts. We look at the world of pro football and the game called life.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks, presented by the U.S. Marine Corps. DJ Bucky here. And, Buck, we have got a jam-packed show today.
Yeah, absolutely jam-packed. We are going to discuss some interesting things. So, perfect pairings.
Yep.
We're trying to match up the perfect pairings for some of these teams. And then I had a little sit-down.
Yeah, you had a sit-down with the general manager. We're going to roll your talk there with Rick Smith from the Texans. Interesting conversation you guys had at the combine talking about the quarterback position, which is relevant now after they made the trade of Brock Osweiler. Also have our scouting competition. We're going to reveal the winners of that a little bit later on in the show. But before we get to those things, Bucky, some interesting stories have come down, I think obviously going to have a big effect on the draft. Number one, I know, is a cornerback that you really like.
Sidney Jones from the University of Washington going down with an Achilles injury during his pro day. It's a very significant injury because he was one of the top corners in the draft, and some people had him viewed as the number one corner in terms of his ability to play and do a lot of different things. The interesting thing that will come out this injury coming out of pro day, how many guys will continue to work at pro days after they work at the combine?
Yeah.
You and I have talked off air about maybe guys are shut it down and not necessarily due to private workouts, but this is a significant injury. Yes, for him specifically, it probably drops him down into day three consideration because he has an Achilles. It's a deep and talented draft class. You have a bunch of corners that can come right in and play, and he's unavailable. But the long-ranging ramifications from this could change the way that scouts and agents and everyone else kind of views the process.
Yeah, I had him going at 14 to the Philadelphia Eagles previously before he got hurt. He was in my top 15 as a player. I think we're going to see 10 corners go in the first 50 picks at a minimum. That's how loaded this class is. So I think that's going to slide him down. I think the third round is probably the earliest we would see him go off the board. You hate it because he's such a great player and had aced every test. The tape was great. You look at what he did at the combine, had a solid workout there. It was in the barn. So hate it for the kid. But hopefully he has some time to recover, goes to a good situation, and we'll see the same player he was at Washington at the next level.
Well, hopefully so. We saw this similarly. Aaron Coleman from Oklahoma goes to the Jacksonville Jaguars as a later pick, mid-round pick, and he has success. He's now their nickelback. Sidney Jones, a team that likes him, will continue to take him, but they're just kind of trying to put the right valuation where to select him. I think it's unfortunate. You do have to do all the work. You have to kind of be seen, and teams want to see you go through their stuff. It's just one of those things along the way that you just hate to see with the injury factor.
All right. Another thing that happened I thought was interesting. Reuben Foster, a lot was made about the fact he was sent home from the combine. There was an issue there at the medical center, kind of two different stories that emerged from it. But going to the Alabama Pro Day, I wasn't there, but talked to a bunch of scouts that were there. They got the Foster side of the story from all the Alabama people, talked to Foster himself. And really, they kind of felt like much ado about nothing. Not a big deal. Not going to affect his draft stock in any way. He's still clearly the top inside linebacker in this draft class. And I'll be surprised if he's not a top 15 pick, Buck.
Well, I mean, I think he's the top dude. I think, obviously, you have to check out what happened. Because whenever something like that happens at the combine and someone is sent home, you just have some questions about their emotional control. How are they going to be away from the facility when they get a bunch of money and have a bunch of free time? I think that when we bring it back to the field, his personality is such that he is a dog on the field. He plays on the edge. He toes the line. He brings a lot of physicality and toughness. He is a dominant strike you player between the hashes. You love what he brings on the field. You just want to make sure that he can manage everything off the field when you're trying to invest this kind of money that you're going to invest in him as a top pick.
He definitely has an edge on the field. Apparently he's got a little bit of an edge off the field. All right, next thing we've got here is we got the big trade, which really came out of left field. Talked about all, you know, Tony Romo could be traded. What's going to happen with him? You know, where's Jay Cutler going to sign? How about Brock Osweiler and a second-round pick and that $16 million price tag go to the Cleveland Browns in a trade? That one definitely caught my attention.
You know, it's funny. When you were talking about the trade, in my mind, I thought Cleveland Cavaliers, because this is an NBA trade. This is something that you typically see in the NBA where people will absorb a contract, someone in the last year of the deal, so they can free up some money to do some other things. For the Cleveland Browns, they acquire another pick, which gives them 8 picks in the first and second round over the next 2 years. That's a lot of capital, a lot of ammunition to make some moves up and down the board the next few years. And if you're looking ahead, based on what they're talking about, eating the $16 million, it gives them another pick to maybe be in play for a Jimmy Garoppolo swap. I like this move from the Cleveland Browns because you now have so much capital that you have the ability to really control your destiny when it comes to selecting the right players to get you back on track.
All right, interesting thing, though. Osweiler, they committed a lot of money to him in Houston, brought him in there, thought he would be the long-term answer. That did not work out for them. They've since just tried to wipe it off the books, erase it. It never happened. Move on. It cost him a second-round pick. But they're moving on down the line to somebody else at the quarterback position. We'll see if that's Tom Savage or if that's Tony Romo, who it's going to be. But I know you had a chance at the Combine to sit down with the Houston Texans general manager Rick Smith and kind of talk about what he's looking for in a quarterback.
So when you talk about those prototypes and the things, the characteristics that you look for by position, obviously in this league, the quarterback position is key. In trying to find a franchise quarterback, what are the traits that you look for in that position?
Well, hey, if you could tell me that and you could define that for me, you'd have my job, okay? Number one, at that position, you know, you need leadership, obviously. Leadership is probably the most important prerequisite for that role in our league. And then there are some physical things that I think are a little bit more important than others. Some people like, you know, a specific height or weight. I think accuracy is important. You know, I don't know that arm strength is as important as people think it is. Growing up in Denver, you know, I spent a lot of time with Jack Elway when I made the transition from, you know, being a coach in Denver to the personnel department. And one of the most important things that I learned from Jack Elway in terms of evaluating quarterbacks is this idea that how quickly, when the quarterback's brain tells him to throw, how quickly does the ball get out of his hand? And then how accurately does it get there? That might be the most important thing when you're evaluating the quarterback. But look, you know, we've got 31 other GMs out here who will tell you another thing, but because there's just so many different things and nuances that you look for, because that position is so important and you've got to have consistent, productive play in order to win a championship.
Better bring your A game.
That's it. We're going to win. We're going to find a way to win.
When you look at our entire football team, I think we thought last year that we built this team, right? And so, you know, this is my I think 11th draft that I'll run. 9 of the 10 first round picks that we've taken since we've been there are still on our football team. So we built this team, and so we felt like we felt pretty good on defense and that we needed to address the offense. And so we had a new quarterback, we had a new running back, we had a new guard, we had a new number 2 wide receiver, we had a new slot receiver. It takes time for that to gel, all those new pieces to gel. A big part of our offense is continuity and that guys see the same thing. So a wide receiver sees the same thing that the quarterback sees. Those kind of things take time. That type of coordination takes time. We felt like we could be good on defense. We were good on defense. And our offense just has to catch up with that. Our entire offense has to improve, and I think that's what we all recognize. I think our entire group understands that, and I think they're committed to getting better.
That's great stuff there, Buck. And it, to me, it's fascinating. When you look at the quarterback situation and what you're looking to evaluate in the position, to me, I think what gets lost is being able to create a structure and put that in place. No matter who you bring at the quarterback position, they can be successful.
Yeah, you have to build it around the quarterback. You have to look at what they can do and what they're very, very comfortable doing and make sure you kind of build it with those things in mind. You want to challenge them and hope that they can learn more of what your ideal system is. But for them to have success, you have to make sure you put them in their comfort zone. And hopefully that's good enough to win enough games where you can continue to build upon what they've been able to show early.
Yeah, a little bit of the chicken or egg, right? You want to try and get the quarterback and build around him, or you want to try and set everything up and then drop the quarterback in. Two different theories on how you do it. Now, one other quarterback that's out there that we're just waiting on to see what happens is Tony Romo. Is he going to be a Texan? Is he going to be a Denver Bronco? Or is he going to pick up one of these microphones and be with the network? I guess those are the three options we're looking at right now. Although the Cowboys, they've yet to release him. Let's assume they do. What makes the most sense for Romo?
You know, it's tough. Obviously, the Houston Texans make a lot of sense for them because they have a defense that's primed and ready, a championship-caliber defense. They play in a division that is very, very winnable by any standards. There's not a dominant team within that division, and they're trying to do some things where they fortify the offensive line, surround them with enough weapons on the outside, and have a running game where he doesn't necessarily have to do everything. I believe that is the best situation, even though there's some other teams that will find him intriguing just because of his veteran presence and the experience and savvy that he's displayed throughout his career.
I think, though, you look at Denver, needed to upgrade the offensive line. They're working on that in free agency. I think you'll see them continue to address that, maybe later in free agency as well as the draft. And if you put a Tony Romo in there with the skill position players they have on the outside, again, a really, really good defense there. I know the division is tougher, but I think that could make the Denver Broncos instantly a Super Bowl contender as well.
Well, I think it certainly can. I think the big thing for Tony Romo is we have to remember he hasn't been healthy for a while. And how can he hold up if he gets knocked around a little bit? You like the good in Tony Romo, but you also have to remember at his age, he's not very necessarily a durable or a dependable commodity because every time he gets hit, he gets hurt.
All right. Let's move on now to perfect pairs. And this is something we've done over the last couple of years. We kind of go division by division, and we try and find with their first two picks what we think would be ideal fits for a football team. So let's start off today. We'll do AFC North, and let's start with the Cleveland Browns. They own the number one overall pick. So let's go perfect pairs. You're up first on who would be the perfect fit for them at number one.
When you're picking number one, you want to make sure that you get a stud, a rock star, a blue chip player, someone that can kind of change the face of the franchise. Myles Garrett in this draft class is that guy. You're talking about an explosive pass rusher off the edge, a guy who has remarkable athletic traits. He's big, he's fast, he's physical, he can rush off the edge. He has the ability to knock the quarterback down. And when you compare him to some of the other number one picks that have come off the board as pass rushers, Mario Williams, Jadeveon Clowney, he's certainly in that grouping when it comes to his athleticism. When I look at him, he reminds me very much of Julius Peppers. Yep. Number two overall pick, we took him when I was with the Carolina Panthers. He has been a dominant player for a long time in this league. I believe Myles Garrett has that kind of natural athleticism where he could be that kind of difference maker for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, that's a good place to start. At number 12, their second first-round pick, I would say O.J. Howard, to me, would be a perfect pair there with a Myles Garrett. O.J. Howard had a chance. They had a chance to coach him in the Senior Bowl, Bucky. He's one of those rare guys who I think has a high ceiling and a high floor. I think there's very little bust factor with him. He can do everything. He's productive as a blocker in a run game. He can run every route you want from the tight end position. He's great after the catch. He's got big-time speed to get down the seam and hit home runs. We saw him do it a bunch last year, really the last 2 years in the postseason in their playoff games there for Alabama. So I think at pick number 12, you pair up O.J. Howard and Myles Garrett. The Browns cannot afford to miss. They're in this mess because they've missed on so many first-round picks. Yep. I think these are two rock-solid picks for this football.
I think they are absolutely rock-solid for O.J. Howard. He's a guy that I call a solar system player. He is a guy that I believe in the passing game, you can build it around him. He's the sun. Everything revolves around him. He will make the other pieces around him better. He also will help any quarterback improve because he's a big target in the middle of the field.
All right, let's go to the Cincinnati Bengals next up here. They have the ninth overall pick. A lot of different areas they can go, but I look at somebody that would just fit in perfectly with what they are offensively. I look at Mike Williams. Look at some of the receivers they lost last year. I think they had a tough time replacing what they lost with Sanu and with Marvin Jones. I think you get Mike Williams from Clemson, a big physical wide receiver who's going to get man coverage because of A.J. Green on the other side of the field, and he will make you pay. You trot a corner out there in the red zone, leave him alone. Mike Williams is going to go up and make a lot of plays.
I think he'll make a lot of plays, and when the Cincinnati Bengals go back and look at when they've been at their best, they've had multiple playmakers on the perimeter. The run that they've most recently had, when they had a lot of weapons, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, A.J. Green, that could attack you in a variety of different ways. If you go all the way back to when they had Ocho Cinco and T.J. Hushmanzada and had success, it's because they had dual threats on the outside, players that could do a variety of different things. A.J. Green is that guy, and he's established. Mike Williams is another guy that I think can do it in a variety of different ways, even though there are questions about his speed. I love what he is as a dominant player on the outside.
All right, how about pick number 41?
How about we talk about adding explosive weapons? How about Alvin Kamara? Alvin Kamara coming out of Tennessee is another one of those triple threat players. Runner, receiver, returner. A guy that is explosive with the ball in his hands. And what I really like about him in the passing game, I think he is one of those matchup options where you really can exploit the coverage of the defense. I know he only didn't have any games where he carried it more than 18 times a game, but I believe if you can get him 20 touches in any variety, I believe he's going to make enough explosive plays to change the game. You add him, you add Mike Williams to go with A.J. Green, and I continue to improve Andy Dalton. I like this offense.
Yeah, he's kind of a mixture of what they have with their other two backs. He can do a little bit of everything there. All right, the Baltimore Ravens. Let's go pick number 16 for them. You like a wide receiver there, Buck.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a polished wide receiver, Corey Davis. Corey Davis coming out of Western Michigan is one of the more polished route runners in this draft. And even though he comes from a place where they say, oh, it's a small school standout, he kind of did it against MAC competition. Can he sustain it? When you look at the tape, you really like what he brings to the table. Outstanding route runner. strong hands, has a knack for making acrobatic catches. To me, he's a natural number one receiver, someone that you certainly can hang your hat on in the passing game.
Yeah, I like him a lot. At pick number 48, let's go to a corner and add Fabian Moreau from UCLA, who height, weight, speed is there. Had some durability issues earlier on, but played great this year, Buck. He's always in position, always in phase. Can find and locate the football. He's tough and physical. I think he's a first-round corner in any other draft. This year, maybe he slides down because of the depth. Man, at pick number 48, you talk about a home run, that would be phenomenal.
Yeah, you certainly like him. 6 foot, over 200 pounds. He's a guy that was a running back when he initially came into UCLA, made the transition to cornerback. I like the length. I like the explosiveness. At the combine, 4.35, 38-inch vertical, 11.4 broad jump. You can see the explosiveness, and he's rocked up. He likes to tackle. He is all those things that you look for. And based on what we know about how you have to play in that AFC North, you need to have big physical players on the edges. He's one of those guys.
All right, let's move on now to the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have pick number 30 overall. And there's some guys, you watch him and you're just like, this guy's a Pittsburgh Steeler.
He's built to play.
I remember watching him when he came up. That's a Pittsburgh Steeler. Hassan Reddick from Temple, to me, is a classic Pittsburgh Steeler football player. You talk about somebody that's instinctive, somebody that's tough, physical, and he's versatile. That's the added bonus you have with him. He can play with his hand down, which he's done. You can stand him up and be an outside linebacker. But I think his home, especially in this scheme, is as an inside linebacker. He showed at the Senior Bowl when he lined up in there, Buck. He was outstanding in coverage. Blitz drills, great. To me, watching him, though, in 9-on-7 and team drills, being able to sort through the trash for not having spent much time in there, he was outstanding. So, to me, I think he's a plug-and-play guy, and, man, he'd make their defense go.
Very natural, and in fact, his background is very similar to the guy that he would replace his background in Lawrence Timmons. Lawrence Timmons was an outside player at Florida State. They move him inside. He has a lot of success. Reddick is a guy that has worked his way from being a safety to an edge rusher to being able to play inside. That versatility would certainly help them.
Pick number 62 here.
Second round, I'm going to go. They still need to find like someone big on the inside that can affect the passing game. I like Jesse James, but I'm looking to get better. How about Adam Shaheen?
Oh, my Ashland guy.
How about Ashland? Small school standout. Talk about 6'6", 6'7", 270 pounds, can run like the wind. Is a guy that is
look at this
physical.
Play. Watch him run right here, Buck. That's 277 pounds.
That's
right
a lot of that moving. And you think about being in the run game, being a very, very physical blocker, so you can still get Lev Bell on the edges. He is a Pittsburgh Steeler type guy, someone that is physical, is aggressive, has nice hands. He kind of fits the mold as that Pittsburgh tight end.
Yeah, my comparison was an old-school Steeler tight end was Eric Green, who was that big, physical,
inline
blocker, but could also get out and get down the seam and make some plays. So, to me, man, he would be a great fit there for the Pittsburgh Steelers. All right, we've gone perfect pairs. We've gone through the AFC North. We'll continue to march through all these divisions as we get towards the draft, Buck. But now I want to talk about an interesting quarterback. We talk a lot about kind of the big four that we've labeled in this draft, right?
Uh-huh.
We've got Watson, Trubisky, Kaiser. Mahomes has kind of joined that group. But there's another guy that's quite intriguing from California. Davis Webb, you had a chance to sit down and chat with him, Bucky.
I did. I loved him.
All right, let's roll it.
I'm excited because I have my man, top quarterback, Senior Bowl MVP, Davis Webb from Cal. How you doing?
Doing well. Excited to be here at the studio, NFL Network.
So how has the process been? Because you've kind of been on the extended journey. You went from playing your last game at Cal to going to the Senior Bowl to doing the combine and getting ready for the pro day. How has the process been for you?
It's been unbelievable. You know, my process is a little different than most. Obviously, playing your first couple of years at Texas Tech as a true freshman, a true sophomore, battled some injuries, had to leave. Patrick Mahomes came in when I was hurt and played great. So Coach Kingsbury and I had a little talk, and, you know, transferring was the best decision for me. And landed up on Cal and went from Lubbock, Texas to Berkeley, California, which is a complete 180. Got to experience new teammates, new environment, new offense a little bit, and be around Coach Jake Spavadal, Coach Dykes. It was a great experience. And, you know, going to the Senior Bowl, Phil Savage and his crew, it was a great week. Worked with Coach Jackson and the Brown staff, which was a lot of fun. And just throwing it a bunch at the Senior Bowl. I think I had more completions than all the other quarterbacks had attempts. So they were giving me a hard time for that. But it's been a lot of fun, you know, getting up on the board, showing all these teams in formal meetings at the combine and at the Senior Bowl. And now I got private workouts scheduled. All these teams will show my football IQ, and they've been blown away. After every interview, most GMs and owners and coaches said that was the best one we've had at the combine. But I don't really look at it that way. You know, I just want to get to a team that believes in me, and whoever drafts me, they're going to get the hardest working guy in the facility, the guy who's going to prove them right every day. Because I'm not worried about the other 31 teams that didn't draft me. I'm just worried about the one team that did, and they stuck their head out there and put their jobs on the line for me. So I take it that way, and I want to work every day for them.
So one of the things I know that most scouts will always ask when they sit down with you, be it at the All-Star game or even at the Combine, they'll ask, who do you pad in your game after? Who are some of the guys that you look at on Sundays that you say, hey, I want to play like this guy at the next level?
Yeah, every year since I was a freshman in college, I've kind of watched the top five offenses in the NCAA as well as the NFL. So, you know, obviously, I watch guys like Big Ben, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan. There's so many guys I've kind of just watched, try to steal schemes, find new footwork, opportunities to get better there, new ways of throwing the football on different platforms, new drills. So I kind of model my game after a lot of guys. I wouldn't say there's one particularly, but the one guy I always, you know, is my favorite quarterback in the world is Tom Brady, just the way he persevered through so much in college and in the NFL, and had his opportunity and made the most of it. Just, I think we have a similar backstory when dealing with adversity, and he's killed it, and he's the best quarterback to ever play this game.
So it's interesting that you brought up the adversity question, because I wanted to ask you about this. One of the things that we do on the podcast, we always ask people, what has been the biggest hardship that you've had to overcome?
Yeah, obviously being the guy for 2 years and then being demoted to the backup in your junior year is not an easy situation to go to. Being a captain at Texas Tech, being the backup quarterback that junior year, it was hard. It wasn't easy, and I had two ways to go about it. I could have been a bad teammate and let everyone around me get really down and just kind of brought everyone down around me, or I could have been a great teammate and waited for my opportunity to come, and boy, did I want it to come at Texas Tech. I was excited every day of practice, every meeting, and every game. I was ready to go. Just never came at Texas Tech, so I left for Cal, and eight weeks later, I was voted captain there by Cal, and that's why the greatest honor I've ever received, and had an opportunity this year, made the most of it, and now I'm just looking forward to my pro day and knocking that out of the park, and then private workouts, have a bunch scheduled, and you know, ready for draft night.
Okay, so we talked about the hardship, so now I have to ask you, because you talked about being a captain at Cal being one of the biggest honors, but what has been the biggest highlight of your career?
There's a bunch. You know, I think, you know, everyone's talked about my freshman year beating Arizona State in the Holiday Bowl. I think we were not favored at all by anybody. They're a top 12 team in the country. Had Will Sutton, Carl Bradford. Darby was one of the good safeties they had. Taylor Kelly playing quarterback. Todd Graham's a great defensive mind. That was a bunch of fun. My first really game I ever played in was TCU. They were ranked top 25, and I came in, threw the game-winning touchdown pass to win that game. But I think the best moment, I think, college for me, because I went to Texas Tech for 3 years, never got the chance to play Texas, never did. And I grew up loving Texas, loved Colt McCoy, loved Vince Young. Jamal Charles, Lima Sweet. I mean, so many guys I watched growing up and never played him at Texas Tech. And then at Cal, I get a chance to play him at home in Berkeley. And it was a shootout, and it came down to the last minute. And that was a great win for our program.
I have to ask you, who's your hero? Who's the one person that you look up to?
I would say my dad, 100%. He's a high school football coach at Frisco Centennial now. Just the way I've watched him over the years, being the bat boy or the ball boy growing up, seeing the way he brings teams together, his team bonding, the way his guys respect him and still contact him today when they have families, you know, 15 years later, the way he coached me and was, you know, hard on me growing up, but at the same time, that's why I'm here today. And I talk to him every single day around 5 o'clock, gives me a call, I give him a call, and we have a really good relationship. And the biggest, you know, thing that coaches in the NFL ask me is, how's your dad involved? And I said, well, honestly, he's not my football coach anymore, so he's more concerned if I do right on and off the field. And when I'm playing my game, make sure you're not cussing because your little cousin's out there watching. So just try to be the best son I can be, because they raised me right, my parents did, and be a good quarterback on the side.
So what do you think, Bucky? Davis Webb, as a player, how does he stack up with those other four we mentioned before we talked to him?
I like him a lot. I like him because he's experienced. He's thrown the ball a lot. So those reps really, really matter. I like his arm. I like his footwork. I think he has a high football IQ. And he was really impressive to me at the Senior Bowl. His ability to adapt to a pro-style system, to me, erases some of the questions that we may have had about his ability to go from the Texas Tech offense to the Cal offense to now an NFL team. I like him a lot. I think somewhere in the second round is a nice sweet spot for him to come off the board.
Yeah, a couple of things. Look, it's not complicated. A couple of basic things you look at when you're evaluating these quarterbacks is, number one, can he make every throw we need him to make? He checks that, right? Number two is, can he learn everything we want him to learn? I think he checks that box. So to me, it's just about getting him some time and some reps in a pro system, and I think eventually could have a nice payoff.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I love his football IQ, his ability to go to Cal, emerge as the captain, learn that offense, and be a master of that offense. I think it speaks volumes about what he is as a player.
All right, so it'll be interesting to see what happens with Davis Webb in the draft. But, Bucky, we've been in the middle of kind of a – it's going on for over a month now, this scouting competition that we cranked up. So what we did is we kind of put the challenge out there to the folks on Twitter and said, if you want to be a scout, just send us a report on a player, and me and Bucky are going to get a chance to look at your reports, and we're going to pare it down. We're going to try and get five finalists. We almost had 300 entries into our scouting competition. We pared it down to five. We brought the five in on audio podcast and did a little video with them a couple weeks ago. And then we were able to, out of that five, we're trying to get it down to two winners. And so part of that process was we assigned a player, Eric Weddle, same player to all five guys. We actually had one, unfortunately, had to drop out. So we ended up going down to four finalists. And so we needed those four guys to submit a report on Eric Weddle. And then we wanted to also kind of simulate if you're in the draft room, right? So you have to get in the draft and you have to make your case for a player. So we gave them each 30 seconds, our four finalists, 30 seconds to make their case for Eric Weddle, what he's about and how that would make sense and why you should pick him. So let's go ahead and see what our four finalists had to say about Mr. Weddle.
I believe that with my report on Eric Weddle, I covered every trade accurately and descriptively. I really painted a picture, as they say. And not only did I do film work, I did all the background research that goes into really building a scouting report so I could accurately describe how I thought about him on film and off the field and any issues he had there medically and anything else that he had.
Eric Weddle can be your defensive leader. He's extremely versatile, covering tight ends, wide receivers, and running backs. He plays center field, and he plays run fits very well. Moves pretty well for his age still. Super active before the snap, can even blitz. And who else can say they've sacked and intercepted Tom Brady in the same game?
Eric Weddle is a versatile coverage chess piece with fantastic read and react ability. His knack for not only anticipating route development and play design in all areas of the field, but to act on it really quickly is what makes him so special. Baltimore uses him all over, too, and his versatility is really problematic because it allows Baltimore to shift and disguise their looks at the line. If I had to nitpick, though, I'd say Weddle's main drawback is the lack of physicality. He's not a traditional in-the-box thumper, and he can get boxed out at times by bigger tight ends. It's more of a stylistic thing than a flaw, but it does show itself in the run game as well. Overall, though, I'd say Weddle is a back-end Swiss Army knife with top-end mental processing skills and one of the best safeties in the game today.
So Eric Weddle's a versatile, instinctive safety. He's a guy who plays with good instincts, and that makes up for his average speed and explosiveness. He makes good moves toward the ball and has good, solid tackling. His eyes are always in the backfield, and because of that, he's able to put himself in position to make good plays, both in the box, in coverage, and out in the slot. He quickly diagnoses and reacts to plays. And keeps his eyes in the backfield on the quarterback and puts himself in the right spot. He's a highly versatile player, and he's fun to watch, and you might call him the Around the NFL podcast of safeties.
All right, Bucky, well, it's not easy paring this down. Not easy paring down from 300 down to 5, then to 4, and now trying to pick the final two. It was not an easy process, but I think we came to agreement here. We found two good ones.
Yeah, I think we found two very good guys that are ready to be scouts. I like the way they were able to present their case, the way they were painting the picture, everything that you look for from a scouting report they were able to give us.
All right, well, let's reveal our first winner here. And one of our two winners joins us right now, Ethan Young. Ethan, man, congratulations from almost 300 down to the winning two. You made it, my friend.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Now the question is, now you've won, you're going to get your Game Pass subscription for a year if you didn't already have it, so you're going to be able to watch all this All-22 NFL tape. I know I got a chance. You went to the Combine, which shows me some initiative and some drive. You're down there networking, trying to make things happen. What's next for you? What are you looking to do, and where do we go from here?
I'm all in, DJ. I'm doing everything I can to try to get my foot in the door with the team, printing off every scouting report I've ever made, any sort of player personnel research I've ever done, putting it all into a binder and sending it off to everybody I can.
That's great. Bucky, we need to know one thing before we let you go, Ethan. Congratulations again, but we need one player. The Ethan Young, if you have a stamp, we give you one stamp. You get to put it on one player in this draft class. I know you're all in on this process, so I need one player. Put your stamp on him.
Ooh, okay. One guy I've really liked on tape, and I'm really curious to see how he runs at his pro day, is Mike Williams out of Clemson.
Ooh, okay.
That's a good one to hang your hat on.
Yeah, I really like his physicality at the catch point. He's a dog in the red zone. You know, you throw it up the ball, he's going to go up and get it. And I love that, and sort of the split end receiver, that's what I want. And I think at the next level, he's going to be physically dominant. You know, the 40 is going to be a question in his pro day. You know, hopefully he's not the Treadwell long speed guy.
Ethan, you know what? You know what Mike Williams is? You know what he is? He's the same as you. He's a winner, my friend. He's a winner. Ethan, congratulations, buddy. Man, you won. You outlasted the whole group here. And I'm sure we'll be in touch. But best of luck as you continue on your pursuit of being a scout, my friend.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate everything.
All right, Buck, we got one winner in the books here. Our final winner, and this is one of our favorite guys we got to know on the last round here, and that's Chris Blystone here, who's coming to us, going to join us again on video. And normally we have some cool kid toys in the background, Chris. It looks like those have been removed from the background, unfortunately, but it looks like we have a lot of awards that have been handed out on that refrigerator back there. That's a sign of good parenting.
Well, that's some high-quality drawing right there, and at least half of it's mine. But my wife lets me put my stuff up on there, but you know, my daughter's gets to go at the top. So,
well, hey, congratulations, man. We, again, this is a big competition, a lot of entrants, and you made it to the finish line. You won. We want to know what's next for you here as you continue to try and pursue your little passion on the side here.
Well, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, I plan to keep listening to you guys because I've learned a lot, you know, over the course of listening to your pod and hearing, you know, your side of things. And the Game Pass side of things is going to help a lot because this was really my first deep dive into some film study. And I'm actually reading, I'm going to blank on the name now, Take Your Eye Off the Ball.
Oh, there you go. Pat Kerwin.
Pat Kerwin's book.
Yeah. Reading that one and learning a ton. Like I said, I didn't really have the playing background. So some of this stuff is like French to me. But I'm loving it, kind of deep diving into that. And I don't really know what the next step is as far as, you know, what I need to do context-wise or, you know, connections with that respect to that side of things. But I'm going to try to take care of my knowledge side of things and really kind of beef up on that side. So.
Well, you're certainly on the right track because to come from 300 to be one to final two says a lot about your knowledge, your acumen, and your ability to paint a picture. So that's great. Kudos to you.
Hey, Chris, man, congratulations. We know you had to skip away from work here to come join us, so we're going to want to get you in trouble with your bosses here, but we did want to bring you on and congratulate you on winning the Game Pass subscription. And this guy's thirsty. He's hungry. He's going to keep learning and keep developing and developing that eye for talent, and I appreciate you listening to our show as well. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks.
That was our first scouting competition, Bucky. I'm going to call it a success. We got a lot of people involved in it, a lot of interaction. It was fun. Give everybody a chance to be a scout for a day.
Yeah, it was exciting. Maybe we can get more people, more participants, and have a bigger class, more competition.
Yeah, let's go. We're going to go for 1,000. We want 1,000 entrants in our contest next year. All right, we got some big news that came down today, and that's Eddie Lacy has signed with the Seattle Seahawks. Surprised by that one?
I am a little surprised by that because they had a lot of running backs come through there. Adrian Peterson, I know Jamal Charles is on his way to come through there, but they elected to go with Eddie Lacy. And Eddie Lacy had two outstanding years at the beginning of his career, over 1,000 in both of those years. But since then, we've seen him kind of struggle with weight, struggle with injuries and some of the like. I wonder if he can get back on track. One of the reports that I heard, 267 pounds.
Ooh.
He was listed at 234. Now, Ike and MJD used to give me a tough time on Game Day Blitz because I would call him Honey Bun. But until he gets under that 260 mark, he is forever known as Honey Bun.
So as we spin it towards the draft, Buck, first of all, obviously he's no longer in Green Bay. Ty Montgomery, I mean, they got
to
pair him.
They have to get. I think they
pair him
to
up with a back in this draft, right?
Legitimate running back. I think they need a legitimate running back because when they've been at their best, when they won the Super Bowl, they had Ryan Grant. They just need a bell cow back, someone that can kind of do it all from the dot position. I don't know if Ty Montgomery is that long term.
Well, we talked to a running back from BYU that I thought would look pretty, pretty good for the Green Bay Packers in the middle rounds. So, I don't know, there'll be plenty of options for them there as we go along. I'm sure the Packers maybe bring in a free agent or so, but lots of draft options as well. Well, Bucky, we did it. It's our first video show.
First one.
Of
get it
in
the books.
Thanks to the U.S. Marine Corps, by the way.
How about that?
For the sponsorship. Like I said, our sponsor can definitely beat up your sponsor, I guarantee.
I feel like you need to start doing push-ups to, like, bring us in and bring us out.
Ooh, that's a good idea. Six, seven? How do you want?
Some burpees and some other stuff.
Okay, we'll see what we can do. All right, anyways, a lot of fun here. A lot to get to as we go towards the draft. We're just getting started here on Move the Sticks, presented by the U.S. Marine Corps.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.